innovative approaches through the work process, to share the work of the National Innovation Centre and Innovation Hubs in England, and to share information on the Institute approach to spreading innovation through professional networks. Next slide. The next slide you should see is entitled The NHS in England. The NHS is a national health service funded from taxes. Each year, the government spends £92 billion, equivalent to $175 billion, on healthcare. Healthcare provided by the NHS is free at point of delivery and has reciprocal arrangements with the rest of the European Union. We have lots and lots of potential patients using the NHS, approximately 50.4 million patients. And care is delivered through 4,400 hospitals and another 32,000 family doctor practices. Everybody within the NHS is entitled to be registered with a family doctor practice to receive services as and when they require them at a point close to their home, apart from accessing emergency services through hospitals and other services such as walk-in centres. The NHS is organised around 10 geographical regions that manage the healthcare of the hospitals and family doctor practices. And supporting the work and development of the NHS are national organisations such as the NHS Institute for Innovation and Improvement. Next slide. As an introduction to the NHS Institute, I would just like to tell you about the four areas of work that we concentrate on. We are a national coordinated body that focuses on the biggest challenges to the health service, bringing together new ideas, technologies and ways of working. Our processes are designed to avoid duplication of efforts throughout the service and develop solutions that are suitable and able to be implemented locally. One of the ways that we do this is by applying a rigorous methodology to develop ideas, and this will be explained in detail very soon. The NHS Institute works in co-production with the NHS so that everything that we design and produce is fit for purpose and able to be used by patients and the rest of the service. We partner the service, the patients and the public in our design. What we design are high-impact, simple solutions which can be easily embedded into the service so they can be fully integrated, bringing the best from across the NHS, industry and international expertise from services abroad. We also bring together expertise in learning and leadership, giving individuals the capacity to make change happen. Next slide. This is an illustration of the way that the NHS Institute works. We bring together service transformation, which Helen will be representing, product and technology innovation, which will be represented by Mark on this teleconference, leadership and learning, represented by myself. And we all support priority programs designed to support new innovations in the NHS. I'm now going to hand over to Helen Baxter.
Hello. I'm now going to talk about how innovation gets into the NHS, and I'm going to describe a project that we are undertaking, which is a further development of the work process that the NHS Institute uses. Next slide. We've observed by our own experience and experience of others in the NHS that the way that change improvement happens isn't really as good as it ought to be. That there often isn't a focus on truly ambitious goals, and there isn't really a stretch, that ideas and solutions are not developed fully or tested in a systematic way. We've also looked at literature reviews of the work process, learning from other innovative organisations, and learning from product development. Also, more recently, we've done some work with other organisations on user-centred design, and using all of those, we've actually come up with a process. Next slide. This slide shows a picture of how we all have ideas, and that these initial ideas can be from an individual, or they may well be from a high priority area in the NHS. What generally happens is that we go with the first solution and implement it very quickly. Then we have to do lots of rework, and which takes a long time, and the solution is never quite as good as it maybe ought to be. Next slide. So the opportunity, as you can see on this slide, is that the workup of the solution takes quite a long time, but we only get to percentage 50% of our total value of innovation. And then the redesign, you can see the small steps, are only actually limited added value, and there's an awful lot of energy and time spent doing that reworking and redesigning the solution. If you look at the next slide, the opportunity is to take a lot longer in the to the initial solution, so you actually do a lot more work up front and a greater investment in time and resources at the front, but your implemented solution is much better thought out and you have a well-tested solution that has significantly higher level of value. And as you can see at the end of that slide, at the graph, there's a big opportunity there to save time and resources which are spent on the redesign and re-engineering. Next slide. So the process that has been developed within the NHS Institute and the one which we are taking out to the NHS is the one shown on this slide, where there is a setup phase, which are the first three boxes, where you have make sure that you have project and organisation readiness and mobilisation, and then through to the four stages of the actual project delivery, and then finally sharing the successes. Although this is shown in a linear fashion, it is not linear, it is iterative, and also certain parts of the process can actually run in parallel. The process is a mixture of processes, tools and experience, which combined with local teams' experience, and then we get better solutions for the challenges in the NHS. Next slide. So the first of these phases is the understand and reframe. So it's important to understand the stakeholders and make sure that stakeholder analysis is undertaken, and that stakeholders understand what the process is that you're undertaking, and understand the problem and the challenge. Frame and reframe, so that's actually about looking at what the problem is and making sure that it's framed in the right way for all the stakeholders. And observation is a key point, a key part of this stage. As you can see on this slide, there's a picture of an inconspicuous gel dispenser, and this was when we were looking at healthcare-associated infections. And it was obvious why the gel dispenser was not being fully utilised. Another area was we'd been asked to develop a poster about using gel dispensers. And as you can see on the other picture, there's actually a notice there about using a notice about using the gel dispenser. Next slide. The other part of the understand and reframe is about futures and mind shift. And John Cotter in The Heart of Change says, people change what they do less because they are given analysis that shifts their thinking than because they are shown a truth that influences their feelings. And the observe phase of this process is very important in doing that. Next slide. Developing concepts. In the developing concept, it's really important that many ideas are generated, and there are lots of different tools and techniques to undertake this. And as you can see there on those pictures, there are lots of post-its, there are pictures, and all sorts of prompts to help generate further ideas. Following generation of the ideas, then it's important to synthesize into themes to ensure you know which direction you're going in, and select appropriate ideas and enhance those. Next slide. In the test and learn phase, it's important to ensure that you prototype, that you simulate what actually will be happening. You may not be able to see the text very well on here, but what it says is that in prototyping, a prototype should test the boundaries and also help to manage risk. A prototype is anything that tests an idea and answers a question, and it is not necessarily about the actual product. It might well be about the interaction it provokes. Following on from prototyping, it's then important to field test those ideas and some of the solutions and refine those ideas further and then consolidate that. Within the NHS, we ensure that we actually do this with different stakeholders. So we do it with the service providers and also talk to those people who purchase the services as well and see how it can best be delivered. Next slide. The final stage is design the delivery, and it's important when you look at the actual process that this is actually considered all the way throughout the process, and especially when you're doing observation and testing, to make sure that you understand how the product or the process or the service design is actually going to be delivered. It considers the design of the product and how people can be enabled to adopt it and how they might need support to be able to adopt it. And within designing the delivery, it's important to ensure that the relationships with the wider system are clear. And again, bringing into that, making sure that if your stakeholder analysis has been done adequately at the start, then that will actually support that. Next slide. Underneath all of the process, it's important to remember that there are certain themes, and in those themes are relationship management, marketing and communication, research and evaluation, knowledge mobilization, measurement, ensuring you know what it is that you're actually testing, and project management. And each of those can be discussed further at length, and there's lots of evidence around the use of those. And that's it for the we use innovation in the NHS. And I'll pass over to Mark now.
Thank you. My name is Mark Taylor, and I work at the National Innovation Centre at the Institute of Innovation and Improvement. I want to talk about the National Innovation Centre and the innovation hubs within the National Health Service in two parts. The first part about the history of innovation in the UK and how we come to this point, and the second part about the structure and functions of the National Innovation Centre. If you look at the history of exploitation and commercialization in this country, we've had a very rich and varied history. The Industrial Revolution showed our strength at exploiting such assets such as coal and tin mines, bridges, railways, and all such stuff like that. But basically, the Industrial Revolution ran out of steam a long time ago. And within the 70s and 80s, a new revolution of exploiting intangible assets started. Now, intangible assets are stuff that you can't touch per se. They are ideas. They are intellectual property, or IP. Now, the universities led this charge. Since the universities specialize in research and teaching, they are a great place to find ideas, intangible assets. Up until the mid-80s in the UK, most exploitation of such ideas was done by the British Technology Group. It had a government mandate to handle all university ideas and try and take them to market. But in 1985, the Prime Minister of the time, Margaret Thatcher, signed a bill that said that if universities wanted to do this in-house, arrange their own exploitation, they could. And by the end of the 80s, most British universities had their own exploitation or technology transfer office. Some of them have been quite successful, but it's taken them a long time to get there. A classic example would be ISIS Innovation, the wholly owned technology transfer office of the University of Oxford. The university invests about £1 million a year. Before that, they get 40 licenses, 6 or 7 companies, and a number of consultancy contracts, which brings back much needed income. But there's much more to it than just that. They discovered that over the years, they started so many companies using bankers and venture capital money that an extra £250 million was placed by banks and venture capitalists into the Oxfordshire region, creating hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs. In the early stages, the majority of that money was used to pay for further research at the university. therefore creating greater knowledge, more ideas. It became a virtuous circle. At the beginning of the millennium, the UK government commissioned something called the Baker Report. The Baker Report concentrated on other public sector research establishments and how they handled the IP, identified it, protected it, commercialized it. And they discovered certain failings in the system, especially within the National Health Service. There was no proper system. Having said that, since most universities, major universities in the UK, had a hospital attached to them, this is not to say that good ideas from the NHS have not got into the marketplace over the past 20 or 30 years. But the Baker Report identified weaknesses in the system. What was suggested was a set of regional innovation hubs, regional technology transfer offices that would identify, protect, and commercialize intellectual property that came from the ideas of the staff that worked for the NHS, whether those staff were clinically qualified or not. Now, the hub network started in the year 2000. Not every office started at the same time. In fact, the last office for the Southwest region only started about 12 to 18 months ago. They have currently 82 people working over 9 offices. Their first job is quite simply to build up relationships with the local hospitals and trusts. That is a difficult job since a single office may have 50 or 60 different trusts to deal with. It takes time to build up the correct relationships so that innovation can take place. The second job they have to do is understand exactly what innovation means within an NHS trust. A lot of people have made comparisons, as I have just done, with universities. But universities produce ideas at a much earlier stage, whereas within the NHS, they are further down the line. They have been road tested because the ideas normally come about because someone actually at the coalface, at the clinical bedside, has thought, actually, that test needs to be improved. That diagnostic doesn't work. That bandage doesn't stay on long enough. This is a different scale of ideas than you'd find within the university sector, and therefore has different challenges. The first challenge, quite simply, is if it's been passed around from bed to bed, from hospital to hospital, is it patentable? Patenting is a form of protection from the intellectual property based around the point that no one else knows your idea at the time of patenting. It is secret at the beginning. Since the NHS doesn't have that particular culture, most ideas within the NHS are not patentable. Different forms of protection have to be found. Then the innovation hubs have the challenge of how actually do you commercialize an idea? You need a company that understands that idea and can turn it into a tangible asset, something that can be touched, something that can be sold. And this is a very large challenge that even universities haven't really got on top of. It's something that a lot of time and effort is spent into, creating networks, working out what needs to be done, actually the terms and conditions of any particular contract with the company that might take it on. And even when a contract is signed, the hub must make sure the company that has taken on the idea is doing what it would said it would do, putting time, effort, and money into developing the idea so that it can be sold back into the market and hopefully be used by the NHS to the betterment of patients and patient care. Historically speaking, though, we found some other differences. Whereas universities come up with ideas which will turn into hard technology, a lot of the ideas that we see within the NHS are based on process management, ideas of arranging systems better so that scarce resources can be managed more efficiently. I've termed this soft IP or non-traditional IP. In other places, it's known as service innovation, service transformation, service improvement. Many titles, but it's the same idea at the end of the day. Since innovation hubs have tried to learn from the best of universities, and universities don't necessarily have any particular skill set in this area, this is an area of great development for us. We need to make sure that we understand service innovation, service transformation, soft IP, make sure we can find the right marketplace for it, if there is an external market for it, but certainly be part of the process to pass around best practice from one NHS trust to another. The Health Industry Task Force, HITIF, reviewed the situation a couple of years ago and decided that there needed to be a central body. As I say, the Innovation Hub started in around the year 2000, but there was no central oversight and coordination body. So a couple of years ago, the National Innovation Center was formed at the Institute of Innovation and Improvement. On the slide, you'll see three main functions. The first is the Innovations Landscape Programme. Basically, that's looking mainly at landscape modelling. The healthcare sector in the UK, like any other country, is a complex mosaic, a very complex jigsaw. And for some companies, it's extremely difficult to actually navigate. So the Landscape Programme is to try and create a map or a set of maps to actually make it easier for people to understand how it all fits together. How does Blogs Bioscience Limited fit with the Wellcome Trust, that fits with the university sector, that fits with a public sector research establishment, that fits with the NHS? It's a difficult map, and that team works very hard on trying to solve those issues. The next part is NIC operations. Now, this is actually quite a difficult operation to run. One of the big problems the NHS actually has is not necessarily getting good ideas into the marketplace, but getting ideas from the marketplace into the NHS. There are a lot of examples where people in the UK have decided to actually launch their products in France, Germany, or the States. And the NIC operations is looking at some of those issues. They also run an advisory service as well, so that small companies that need advice about where they should go, whether it comes to funding or structural issues, have a place to talk to. Finally, there's the hub oversight and coordination role, which is mine. As you can see from the slide, there are three areas. The innovation hubs, the nine I've mentioned. There's also a training hub and an adoption hub. They're both quite new, but I'm going to stick to talking about the innovation hubs this afternoon. The innovation hubs are at a point of great growth. On average, the innovation hubs are under 3 years old. As I said earlier, the first in 2000, the last about 18 months ago. Last year, they did about 50 deals. Now, in comparison, the university sector at this point in development was doing far less than that. At the moment, there are at least 80 deals under negotiation, i.e., the innovation hubs have 80 possibilities of getting technology created by the NHS into the marketplace. And we hope that not only will they actually create money and surplus for the NHS, but they will also improve patient care. But it is not just about making money. And this, again, is very different from the university and other public sector areas. It's about added value, and it's about saving money too. The best example I have is a piece of copyright from the East Midlands. Someone from the East Midlands realized that a fair number of patients were coming to hospital without the prescriptions they had already been prescribed by their local pharmacy. So hospital pharmacy had to prescribe again at great loss. The nurse in East Midlands decided to actually send out a green bag with every please come to hospital letter that was sent out, asking people to bring in their meds with them. Not only did this actually save money because hospital pharmacies didn't actually have to reissue drugs, they also discovered a lot of patients were taking drugs that no one was aware of them taking. They may have been just simple herbal remedies or things they borrowed from Mrs. Jones down the road. Either way, it was a bit of a revelation for some patients that what they were taking might have been causing the problem in the first place. Now, that idea is protected by copyright and has been licensed by the local East Midlands Regional Innovation Hub. In terms of money made for NHS, it's very small. I think a few thousand pounds last financial year. But it's estimated that for each major hospital it takes us on, the saving could be over £1 million a year. This is a way of looking at innovation that other public sector research establishments and universities haven't necessarily done because it is not relevant to their sector. But it is increasingly important that innovation hubs look at added value, money saved, as well as money made. And that concludes my presentation. Oh, sorry, I do apologize. There's some more here, which I think has been given to me by a colleague of mine. Basically, the work that we do is split up into work packages. I've mentioned the innovation landscape, the fund brokerage, training hubs and adoption hubs, and the innovation hubs. We also have an extremely good website, which I recommend that you look at, which is www.nic.nhs.uk, which explains in more detail what we do and some of the contacts you may wish to talk to. The technology adoption project I've already discussed, it's going to be a long-term one. But a lot of this really comes down to governance and operational documentation. One of my key areas of expansion in my job, and what I suggest that anyone needs to do in areas like this, is to make sure the background governance is done correctly. You need to be able to measure, and you need to be able to push forward decent ideas through governance and operational documents. Everything we do goes back through a performance management system that therefore feeds back into the Institute of Innovation and Improvement's business plan. That therefore creates a loop back to the original strategic overview for the NIC, which leads to the work packages, which leads back to the performance management, and then back to the business plan. We try as much as possible to overlap and work with every part of the Institute, which is relevant, and the NHS. None of this can actually stand up alone. It has to be a joint effort to be successful. And if I can now pass you back to Claire.
Hello, everybody, again. I'm going to conclude our presentation with three areas of how the NHS spreads innovation through its professional networks from the Institute into the frontline service. From the work we did with the project on healthcare-associated infection last year, we found out that staff, and nurses in particular, find out about innovation through six routes. That is, their professional peers, through attending conferences, through mail shots and things that arrive through the post that are either expected or not expected, through cold calling and through representatives from industrial companies, through the internet and through journals. The other interesting point that we found was that the access to information like this was very dependent on whereabouts the nurse worked, her level in the organisation, and her seniority in terms of being able to attend conferences, have access to journals, have the internet at work, and the ability to be able to see and receive representatives. So what the NHS Institute is trying to do through its professional networks is concentrate on areas that are the most accessible to the most people. Next slide. The first network that I'd like to introduce you to is NHS Live. You may have seen NHS Live advertised in conjunction with the NHS Live Awards. But NHS Live is far more than just an award scheme that runs every year. It's a national learning network which goes to support staff, patients and the communities to raise local ideas for improvement. As Mark has said, people working in the service are often the ones who come up with the ideas. So how are they harnessed and how can they be rewarded for the people who have developed them? And this is where NHS Live comes in. Next slide. The role of NHS Live is working with individuals and teams and groups within the NHS to support their work in developing and delivering improvement. NHS Live also facilitates access to like-minded groups of individuals through a database. It can help raise the profile of the work that you're doing, both nationally and locally. And it can help by shadowing and facilitation with the private sector, as well as brokering and facilitating partnerships. NHS Live is concerned with knowledge sharing, but also about celebrating the success of things that go well for individual projects and individual practitioners through the NHS, so that we are avoiding what we call in the Institute islands of innovation and islands of improvement, where a fantastic idea gets no further than the ward on which it's been developed. NHS Live is valued greatly by the people who are its users. Anybody can use NHS Live. And if you look on the next slide, you will see some of the comments that have been made by people who have used the service. Without NHS Live, our project would not be here today. NHS Live has given us the permission and space to look at our service in a very different and imaginative way. The network minimizes the risk of reinventing the wheel. It gives permission to think big and bold. and the commercial sector partnership gives this project an edge. A team member from outside the service gives a different perspective. And this last point is the key to the success of working with NHS Live. If you would like to know more about NHS Live, you can contact myself at the address given on the final slide, and I will make sure that your questions or your comments are passed to the NHS Live team here in the Institute. Next slide. The second network that I would like to talk to you about is called NHS Networks, which sounds very simple, but it's a way of bringing together lots and lots of people on a weekly basis and sharing information through an electronic network system. NHS Networks exists to help people in the NHS help each other, support each other, and sharing information so they don't reinvent the wheel. There is a website which holds a register of all of the networks that come together to form NHS networks, ranging from national clinical networks to local professional networks. The type of network that is facilitated through this system can be anything to do with the NHS. It's not specifically for clinicians, it's not specifically for human resources or administration staff. It's for anybody who has a network that would benefit from sharing and learning from others. When a network registers with NHS Networks, they're given their own web space and they can upload documents, share information, and signpost people to things that they're doing. There's a way to create online communities, online libraries, and get things that are happening in particular communities shared on a weekly basis through a weekly newsletter to the rest of the NHS. They can also talk to each other in forums and chat rooms and blogging, and a particular forum of interest might be the Community Matrons Forum, but there's also a network for the teaching PCTs and several other sites. The electronic newsletter, which goes out to NHS Networks members, goes out to over 10,000 people every week. It pinpoints what's new on the website, but also gives links, electronic links, to key publications and announcements in healthcare. The NHS Networks site is managed so that the most up-to-date information is always available as quickly as possible. It's a two-way process where networks can post information. It's a push and pull of information from the service to NHS Networks and backwards. So it works both ways, both giving and receiving information. NHS Networks also promotes and supports networking as a business process, providing literature and frameworks to help service delivery networks function effectively. We're currently looking to link up with networks internationally, and if anybody is listening to this teleconference who would like to become parts of NHS Networks, then we would welcome them to contact us so that we can get them registered on our site. We would like to hold a virtual conference, an international virtual conference, for sharing experiences from across the world. So that is an invite from the NHS Institute to anybody who would like to join us on NHS Networks to both learn from us, but also help us to learn from you. Next slide. The final and probably the most innovative of the contact networks that we have is the CHAIN network. CHAIN stands for Contact, Help, Advice and Information Network. Next slide. CHAIN was started by the University of Central Lancaster, in 2000 as a small project that was aimed to link people together around particular topics, which at that time were research and evidence-based practice. It soon became apparent that the CHAIN network has a function far exceeding just research and evidence-based practice. So a second chain on work-based learning was created. and subsequently the innovation and improvement chain, which is chain three, is supported by the NHS Institute. Chain is a multi-funded business in that the Institute funds chain three and different organisations put in pots of money to support different aspects of different chains. There is currently in development a chain for Canada and North America. We have just launched a chain in Scandinavia based at Jönköping in Sweden. And there are different ideas for different chains also being developed. For example, the Macmillan Cancer Care are launching chain four. Within chain three, which I'd just like to concentrate on for a moment, chain supports any ideas and sharing around innovation and improvement. We have subgroups within the chain on clinical microsystems, lean and lean thinking, and people who are involved in improvement for education. Next slide. The whole ethos of chain is linking the people that we know with the people that we know of and the people who we do not know but we think would be willing to help us if only we knew who they were, what they know, and how we can reach them. To join chain is very simple, and I will give you the website link in a moment. When you join chain, you will be asked to fill in a profile of yourself as a practitioner or as a member of any healthcare community. You do not have to be a member of the NHS. You can be from any discipline related to health and social care. The benefit of chain is that it's possible to both share ideas that you have, but also gain information about something you may wish to know about with your work. If I give you an example of something that we have just used chain for, we are developing an improvement leader's guide on project management, how to manage an improvement project. And we asked chain members what would be their top five tips that they would use if they were writing a guide on project management. And from that, we got 87 replies with five top tips. And that was within 10 days of sending out the request. Because chain is a managed network, you will not get hundreds of emails clogging up your inbox every day. Your request for either information or to share some knowledge you have goes through a central service, which is then filtered and sent only to other people who have put the same type of interest on their profile as yourself. So if we think about the example I've just given, that message would have gone to everybody who had project management or improvement down in their profile. Similarly, we are developing a piece of electronic learning on basic improvement skills, and we asked chain members who had an interest in e-learning what they would like to see in a good e-learning product. And again, we got over 50 replies from the very simple that said, make it fun and visual, right down to very detailed technical specifications of what we should consider making the product like. So really, if I'd like to reiterate, chain is about linking the people that we know with the people who would be willing to help us if we only knew who they were and where they were on a worldwide basis. Next slide. This really concludes the main body of what we would like to talk about, but we would like to invite you to contact the NHS Institute to learn more about our work and go on our website. We are developing lots of products and services that are new innovations that will help people in their work and to work in an innovative way. On the final slide, you will see the website for the NHS Institute. There's also the information of how to join chain. Chain is free, and I would recommend it as an excellent service. You can also join NHS Networks and also NHS Live. Any questions that you would like to put to us, you can do now, or you can email us at the address on the screen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Helen, Mark and Claire, for an illuminating presentation. I certainly found it absolutely fascinating to hear about the support that's out there for us as we're busying along doing our everyday jobs as infection control professionals. It's good to know that our bright ideas could be supported by your work. Thank you very much indeed. I'd just like to ask one question. When it comes to professional skills like our infection prevention and control, when you've got a body such as we have, a rapid review panel, how do you take their conclusions into consideration when you're looking at new products and innovations, for example?
Right, I think that's the question that I will hand over to Mark.
Okay, more context. Go on.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, a learned professional body coming up with some conclusions about various products and innovations and new ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take on board their advice as part of your total sort of picture?
Oh, fine, I see what you mean. Well, that's one of the points why HITIV said there needed to be a central coordinating body. Was to make sure that messages from learned bodies could actually be passed down to the innovation hubs. Now, the management chain, if I can use that, the operating chain, is basically we have quarterly meetings with every CEO of every regional innovation hub that looks at intellectual property, to which to discuss problems that they have, successes they've had, but equally to feed back not just learned bodies' information feedback, even things from Europe. A classic example would be the recent framework for research and development innovation. So we have this communication system and structure in which ideas can be passed back to the hubs as well as hubs up to us and out as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Paul. Sorry.
It's okay, fine, thank you.
It's Mark.
It is Mark.
Paul Webber there. Now, we do have a few moments. Are there any questions from any other listeners in today?
This is Paul from Canada.
Hello,
Mark.
Paul from Canada.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm wondering how much, firstly, congratulations on what you're doing. It sounds tremendously well thought out, which is, I say, perhaps atypical of government organizations sometimes. And I appreciate that you're not reinventing the wheel on many of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Often you go to the conferences and you see several posters on several approaches, or in fact the same approach that's taken by several different organizations to the same problem. And if they had talked ahead of time, perhaps they might have been further ahead. Do you have connections with the Infection Control Nurses Association? Are you working with them directly?
Not myself personally, but if I just ask, can you repeat the last part? The infectious nurses,
the Infection Control Nurses Association in the UK.
Control. Okay. Do either of us, do any of us, have any dealings with the Infectious Control Nurses Association in the UK? I'll pass you back to Claire.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi,
we did, and we had a great deal of support from the Infection Control Nurses Association when we were working on the priority program around healthcare-associated infection last year. One of the things in the way that the Institute works is that the priority programs that we work on, which are defined by the Department of Health, are all time limited. And it was a piece of work that started actually in June 2005 and completed the following March. So it was a 9-month piece of work, and we were greatly supported and given lots of advice by the Infection Control Nurses Association. We went to their meetings and they were incredibly helpful.
Now, how much of what you're doing then is transferable to other countries? Is it uniquely British? I know you're connecting through your international networks with people and organizations worldwide, but how much of what you've actually done, the architecture that you've created, how much of that is actually transferable?
I think a lot of it would be transferable. we've found that the things that we do transfer better abroad rather than from abroad coming into us in terms of some of the services and products that I've worked on, given that the NHS is a public funded body and we have to work within tight financial constraints. But yes, there is a lot of transferability, and we've promoted our work quite widely, and the response has been back that yes, things can be used and adapted.
Wonderful. We'll certainly do our best to let people know about your chain program, and I think you'll find a tremendous response. The audience for this teleclass is in fact more international than it is British.
Great.
So I think you'll get a tremendous response, and thank you very much for that.
Anybody can join Chain and say it's free. It takes about 2 minutes on the website, but the links that you can get from it are quite phenomenal. I mean, I asked about the e-learning, and I got responses from Sweden and Australia as well as locally. So it does go truly globally.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions for our teleclass faculty this afternoon? Okay, if you do come up with any more questions, then you can certainly email us, either Paul Weber or myself, and we'll forward your questions. I'd like to point out that our next UK teleclass is listed on the final slide. This will take place on September the 24th, when Professor Elaine Larson will present a free teleclass actually from the Infection Control Nurses Association annual conference. And she'll be addressing the title, Challenging Behaviour, Changing the Culture, I think which links very nicely to our theme for today. Professor Larson is internationally renowned. This is going to be a teleclass not to be missed. So thank you all very much for joining this teleclass, and a very special thanks again to our team today, Helen Baxter, Mark Taylor, and Claire Allen. Goodbye for now.